Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today excels when it comes to personal and relationship coaching. She's been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneur Magazine, and Thrive Global, among many others, for her work, and she now travels the world teaching her process of inner evolution. Her name is Domini Drew, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. So, Domini, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I have been looking forward to this one ever since I was a guest on your show. We had such a great conversation.
That was so fun.
Oh, my goodness. I listened to that and I'm like, that was really good. We talked about a lot of good stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I thought maybe for us getting started here, if you could share a little bit about your story, like why you started studying what you came to study and that type of thing.
Absolutely. I have a rather fascinating beginning story, I think. I'm now a dating and self-mastery coach. I help people see why they're keeping themselves single or basically sort of holding themselves back in life, where they're sabotaging themselves without realizing it. And I show them how to eliminate that in a matter of just a couple of weeks. And the process that I now teach, I actually used on myself for almost 20 years. And so I'm a total poster child for the success of this work. And that's why I'm so passionate about teaching it, because I used to be, I started when I was 19 years old and I was a wreck. Like I was a mess. Not any particular, more traumatized than anybody else mess, just like the average mess. I was just riddled with insecurities and uncertainty and self-doubt. Oh my gosh, a lot of self-loathing. I was uncomfortable with my body. My body had a lot of extra weight on it that it didn't want, and I couldn't get it off no matter what I did. And so all of these issues plagued me, anxiety, depression, just the things that we've now, interestingly, kind of have become quite used to, but I was very, very unhappy. And so when I found this work, it's quite fascinating in that it takes you down to the deeper levels where you're really holding yourself back without realizing it. There's something off. You believe something that isn't true and you're living life as if it's true and it's messing up what you get or things like that. And as I began to identify and clear these underlying issues, I started to just shift. Not because I was solving the symptom directly. I didn't, have depression counseling, but I solved the underlying issue that was causing me to feel depressed. And as a result, the depression was just, it melted.
Goes away.
It totally went away. At some point, I shifted whatever was carrying the weight, and the weight fell off my body in a very short period of time, and I was never able to put it back on. It was really, it's like this process of self-mastery where you're becoming, you're really mastering your inner game,
Yeah.
You're finding out how it is that you're, why you're getting what you're getting in life and how to shift it so that you can really get what you want.
Yeah. It's really cool. And I'm just making a few notes there. And remind me, because I know you have your master's degree. What is your master's in?
It's in something called transpersonal psychology, which is the study of the spiritual experience, the beyond personal experience. So it looks at things like near-death experiences, psychedelics, energy healing, the power of prayer, things that we sort of, everybody sort of goes, oh yeah, you know, that's definitely a thing. Or some people say it's not. It looks at it from an academic psychological perspective, like, okay, is this really a thing? Can we measure it? And it was quite interesting. I really enjoyed it quite a lot.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it was a great topic.
Yeah. Okay, so a few things you said there. I was kind of smiling at the mastering your inner game, because I love that. And I don't know if I mentioned this to you before, but one of my favorite books, it's by Tim Galloway. He's a former professional tennis coach, or he might still be a professional tennis coach. He talks about the greatest opponent we face is the one on our side of the net.
Oh, yeah.
And I, when I read that, I'm like, that is so totally true.
Yes.
So when you talk about mastering your inner game, like, what does that really mean to you?
I mean, that just put it so brilliantly. And given that, you know, your listeners are probably athletic like you are, that actually is a great way of phrasing it, of writing it out. You know, there are the two sides of the net. There's you, your inner experience, your inner world, and then there's everybody else. And opponents will come and challenges will come, but they don't need to beat you. They don't need to lay you out. If your inner game is strong, it doesn't matter who's on the other side of the net. I mean, and that's kind of a reality, you know?
That's right.
You know, yes, you may need to know like which end of the tennis racket to hold and things like that, but like,
there's some basics.
There are some basics, but like the amount that is possible to be transformed within the inner game, within on your side of the net, is way more than we think it is. Not just like, oh, we have two Olympic, you know, tennis players and one's got his game, you know, his inner game, one doesn't, and that one will take it. Like that's a small advantage. I'm talking like a huge advantage. The difference between being single or not single, or have your body the way that you want it to be or not, or being happy or not. All of those things are on your side of the net. And so if you master that, it's like a hack to life.
Yeah. Well, what are some of those things that you see that, you know, kind of come up and sabotage us?
Oh man. You know,
it's how much time do you have, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, how long are your listeners going to be in for? Actually, you know, it's probably a much shorter list than most people might think. It's mostly fear.
Really?
Yeah. And there might be, if I were to put more, if I were to sit with it for another minute, I might be able to feel into whether or not it's only fear. It may very well only be fear as far as what's underneath whatever the issue is. But a level up from that, when you can sort of relate with it a little bit more, athletic situations, it's going to be around your competence. Can you do it or can you not do it? A mindset of I can absolutely do it, not a thought, mind you. The thought I can do it doesn't hold any weight. Actual underlying belief. I know what my reality is. My reality is I can do that. It's deeper than we think it is. But a mindset, a reality of I can do that will beat every time a mindset of I can't beat it. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And so if you hear in your head, I can't do it, then that shows you that you've got that underlying.
Yeah. That's interesting, Dominique. I've never heard that distinction between a thought and a belief.
Oh, huge.
Can you tell me more?
Absolutely. If your thoughts and your beliefs held equal weight, if their mass was equivalent, then I could tell you, you know, you come to me and you say, you know, I'm a cross-country skier and I want to do biathlons and I can get to this level, but I can't get to this level. And I go, okay, great. So that's your limit. That's your edge. That's what you want. And I could just be like, Bobby, you can absolutely get to that next level. You go, girl. And then you go do it. But you're not able to be convinced that easily because otherwise you wouldn't have had the problem in the first place. A thought is very easy. I can be like, what if you could do it? And you'd be like, oh, that's interesting. Right. And that might create a little shift. A belief is something that is formed at a very, very young age. And what happens is, you know, the example that I give is if you have a baby in a crib, right? And mom and dad are over the crib and they're cooing and baby feels that and he's safe and everything's fine. And then the phone rings and dad goes to answer the phone and mom's still there cooing and baby's just fine. And then dad comes back in and says, honey, your sister's been in an accident. And mom goes, huh, and leaves the room. Now, from that baby's perspective, what happened was he could feel energetically all of that connection. You know, we're very tuned into our parents because our survival depends on them, right? And so, and then suddenly she went into fear and she left. Yeah. So from that baby's perspective, he doesn't necessarily know that she's coming back.
Right.
And so, and if she's not coming back, that baby will die. not survival. In the situation I just described, but innately that baby knows that if she doesn't come back, he's dead. And up until the last, you know, few hundred years, that's been true. So, you know, right now probably somebody will, you know, social services or something will happen, but baby's not aware of any of that, right?
Right.
And so he's like, his life may have just been threatened. Oh my God, now what?
Yeah.
And what they'll do is children will tend to generalize their life experience. So they'll take that one experience and they'll make it true for everybody. So that baby, depending on the baby, will make a decision, like an assumption about the world, like he's learned, quote unquote, something about the world, which from our adult perspective, we can see is not actually accurate, but it is very real for him.
Yeah.
And that assumption might be something like, people will leave me, or women can't be trusted.
Yeah.
Or I'm not enough. And right. It will lodge in the subconscious, and as if the, you know, his body will grow, but it's growing around that assumption. He is living his life as if what he believes is true, but he doesn't even know that he believed it. He just thinks that's the way the world is. That's a belief. It's an assumption about reality. We assume the sun is going to rise tomorrow. Everything indicates it is probably going to rise tomorrow. I have no doubt about that, but it is actually, it's something that we're assuming is going to be true because it's in the future.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, that little baby comes into my office and goes, man, I can't understand why, but every woman I'm in a relationship with cheats on me.
Hmm.
And I go, great, let's start there.
Yeah.
Or they come to me and they go, man, every job I get, you know, with a, they're always the female boss and she always fires me, you know, or every coach I have in cross country skiing is, you know, seems to look down on me and treats me like I don't know what I'm doing. It's like, whatever the pattern is, there is something in you that's attracting those coaches. That part of you wants those coaches because it has an idea of reality and it's proving itself right.
Yeah. And that goes to, how do we attract the same negative experiences over and over again?
Yeah.
I had this was years ago. I was going through a bad breakup and I said to my coach, I'm like, gosh, it seems like I'm just attracting the same type of people over and over and over again. And she's like, you are. I'm like, oh my God. So in my first question to her, her name was Maria, was, okay, so what do I do about it? You know, how do I change that? So when someone comes to you that way and you know that they're attracting that same type of person all the time, how do you help them stop or start attracting what they do want?
By finding what that underlying belief is. If you knew that if you're inclined to share, what kind of person were you attracting that you didn't like?
I was attracting the same type of, I grew up in an abusive household. So, you know, the type of person that would never physically abusive, but more the emotionally where I could be needed kind of.
Yes.
And then it was always used against me.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So people who need you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I was needed from a very early age in that
kind of volatile household.
Uh-huh.
So there was something in your system that learned, quote unquote, not really, but took from that situation when you were a kid that in order to be safe, you needed to be needed.
Yep.
Right. Especially if your family is volatile. Again, the baby's system has a lot of information already. He knows that you need them, that he needs them to serve, you know, you need them to survive.
That's right.
So then you do whatever you can to make sure you ensure your survival.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make sure they're needed. So this stuff is not light. And the example I gave had no abandonment or neglect or abuse. But usually, of course, if that happens, then that will be some related to the wounding experience. But like, you know, they have no, the child has, it knows on some level what it is that it needs. So by the time you come into my office, like, you know, it looks like, man, I just keep attracting the same boss or the same relationship. Like, why does that keep happening? But it's a survival thing.
Yeah.
You're fighting for your life. A part of you is actually literally stuck in some point in your childhood when something bad happened or when something bad happened one more time and you shifted into, I need to protect myself. This is not safe.
Right.
And you kept that. And so when you become aware of it with your adult awareness, oh, I see that that's what happened. And that's the conclusion that I drew. Oh, I get it. Then it begins to shift and it will literally reintegrate into your adult system and you won't have that issue anymore at all.
So the awareness sounds like that's key.
Yes.
Yeah. And in my case, it was the safety. And also, and this was something I had to work through, was not just that's when I'm safe, but that's how I have value.
Aha. Yes.
You know what I mean? And that, oh my goodness gracious, people can pick up on that.
It's wild, isn't it?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. People know everything that's going on inside you on some level, like the level of communication that people have. Guys are like, oh, I mean, I'm afraid to approach women, but they don't know that because I approach very confidently. And you're like, they probably know.
You probably know. Oh my goodness. But yeah, I think that the awareness, it was a coaching conference at Harvard put it on. It was a few years ago. My God, it was like 11 years ago, but whatever. That's a few. Yeah. It's amazing as you get older. It's like a few years is like a decade.
Couple years. No big deal. Yeah. No big deal.
But John Whitmore was there, who's, you know, he wrote Coaching for Performance. He's this legend in coaching. Yes. And he was on the main stage and he said, awareness is often curative just by being aware of what's going on around us and more importantly, what's going on inside of us.
Yes.
So I love that.
What's going on your side of the net?
On your side of the net.
Yep.
Yep. Absolutely. Earlier you had said finding out the things that aren't true. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, it's basically exactly what you just said. So you identified that you were equating being needed with having value.
Yeah.
Those two things are not actually related.
Right.
We know that as adults because we've lived some life and we've learned some things and we've seen that to be true. But you didn't know that.
Mm-mm.
So within your reality, and it really is your reality. This is why everybody has a different reality. We all sort of think, oh, we're all looking at the same world, but we're actually very much not, because you're looking through the world through a screen of, in order to have value, one must be needed.
Yeah.
Because that's what you learned to be true, or the conclusion that you drew. This is the level of beliefs. You can see how it's so much deeper than thought. Your cellular structure as you grow forms around this, which is interestingly why when you begin to unearth them, your body starts to change.
Right.
Because you're not overcompensating, right? It's like getting injured in a sport and then like not having it heal quite correctly. Like you'll start compensating. This one's a little high, so this one goes a little bit low, and your body starts. And so you feel straight because you're standing upright, but actually you're like kind of all kinked up, right?
Right. A little wonky.
And so, a little wonky. Exactly. That's a great word. I'm so glad that the word's still around. So eventually, it's like clearing out all these things that aren't actually true. You're like, oh, what if I had value without being needed? What would that be like? As you become aware of the fact that you believe that, you can make a different choice. But while it's in the subconscious, you're a victim of it because you're powerless to fix it. You know, you can't access it.
Yeah. So when you just said there, you're a victim to it.
Yeah.
Right. What's on the opposing side of being a victim?
Like total empowerment.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
And that shifts very much from the shift in this. And this is something really, really quite magical. You can shift anything from victimhood to empowerment simply by embracing self-responsibility.
I read on your website, and I was going to ask you about this because it's so, I just loved it. What was it? Self-responsibility is the key to self-mastery.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yes, 100%. The extent to which you are unwilling to take responsibility for your life experience is the exact extent to which you are unable to fix it.
That's good.
So if you have all these coaches, right, and you're trying to get to the Olympic level in tennis, and you're like, man, I'm doing all the things, I'm practicing, but these coaches are the worst and they're holding me back. And that's why I'm not an Olympian and you're miserable about it all the time. If you can shift that from, man, coaches are just jerks now. It's the trend in coaching and that's how they are. And it's awful. If that's the perspective you hold of that particular situation, you're a victim of it because you can't fix coaches.
Yeah. It's external.
It's external. It's the other side of your net, not your side of the net.
Yeah.
The other side of your net is not, the of the net is not your business.
That's right. It's only what's on your side.
Fix it. You can't do anything. Don't touch it. Leave it alone. That shit's just going to happen. Whoever's going to show up is just going to show up. You play your side.
That's right.
And that'll clear about 99% of your life problems right there.
That's right. We worry a lot about what's on the other side of the net.
Yes. And by definition, we are powerless to do anything about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't fix coaches as a whole. Coaches are going to do whatever they're going to do. But also coaches aren't really the problem. You're putting the problem outside of yourself. And so if you shift that from, man, coaches are just really terrible lately or in my area or whatever, to, I seem to keep attracting coaches who are really unnecessarily aggressive. I wonder what that's about. Now that perspective has potential for change. You can do something about what you're attracting.
Right.
It's not the coaches. Those coaches work great for a bunch of other people who aren't you. You are attracting coaches who don't work for you, or relationships that don't work for you, or experiences that don't work for you. And as a result, and so when you make that, just that small shift from, God, men just don't want to commit, to, boy, I really seem to attract men who are not into commitment. I wonder what that's about. Then you've shifted from total victimhood, can't fix men, to empowerment.
Yeah. It, God, a couple of things just came to mind there. I don't know if I shared this with you before. I was in my early 20s and I didn't go to college right out of high school, you know, so I had to work my way to be able to pay for it. And I'd had a bunch of jobs and I was always like a really good performer, but I didn't get along with my coworkers. Like I'd always have issues. And I remember I just switched jobs and there I am. I don't know. I'm 21. I'm some young, you know, whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, no matter where I go, I've always got these bad coworkers, you know? And it was like the universe tapped me on the shoulder and said, what's the common denominator?
Yes,
Bobby. And I was like, oh my God, the problem might be with me. And I started looking, you know, because my mom loved her dearly. She was a very aggressive communicator. And so that's what I learned. And, you know, surprise, surprise, not everybody likes that. So
that's
who would have known? But it was such a good experience because that's when I started studying all this stuff and like, wait a minute, what do I own? And every night I had this journaling practice. I would write what went well today, what interactions went well, and why, what interactions didn't go well and why. And for those that didn't, it was, what did I own? Or what do I, because sometimes maybe I didn't own anything and I can't do anything about that. But when I did have ownership, what could I do? And that was powerful. It was just really a powerful activity.
That's a great exercise. Did you just make that up?
Yeah. Somehow when I was in my early 20s, that occurred to me.
That's so brilliant. And I love that you had that level of realization at 21, that you let that tap on the shoulder come in and actually took it to heart. I mean, your life might be in a very different place if you hadn't done that.
Yeah. It was pretty obvious. I needed to do something, you know? So, but it, and I've used that version of, or different versions of that same activity many times in many different ways, because it was such a powerful thing for me.
I may have to steal that from my clients. That's pretty good.
Go right ahead. Because it helped me. That's awesome. The other thing, when you were talking, it reminded me, I was in my late 20s and I was going through, you know, some counseling around, you know, some of the stuff that happened when I was a kid. And my, my therapist said to me, she said, you know, everything that happened to you, what happened to you as a child is not your responsibility. Right. And she goes, but what happens from this day on is your responsibility.
Because you're now aware.
You're now aware.
Yes.
And she goes, that's both scary. And some people run from that because it, you know, to embrace that kind of responsibility, do you ever find that, like, has that been scary for you or for some of your clients?
You know, not for me. I think you and I have this in common in that I leap right toward that sort of thing.
Where's the lake?
Where's the solution?
I'm doing a cannonball in.
through the pain, through the suffering. I'm, as long as I know that this is the solution and I found this work so early that like it just solves, I mean, it solves like every single problem. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And so I just got to where I just jump in. But for a lot of people, I think that is quite a terrifying thing, what we're even talking about here. And I think that gift has really served me well. You know, I'm inclined towards self-responsibility. I'm inclined towards, you know, stepping into my power and solving the problem. And I think that served me really well. But it's still, even if you don't have that, even if this is terrifying, that's okay. It's the willingness. You know, what are you willing to face to actually push through this and get what you want?
Yeah. Do you find sometimes people resist that part of the process?
Not by the time they find me. I think a lot of people on the planet absolutely do. I think most resist that process. And that's why, you know, a lot of things about the world are the way they are. But for me, there is something about me that seems to communicate to people, whether I speak or not. It's like a little bit of a catalyst. Like by the time you come to me, you're over it. Like you want to fix it. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
And those are the people who tend to be attracted to work with me because there's something about me that's like, okay, great, let's get going. Not that I would ever like push or rush my clients. I never need to. There's something about me energetically that just gets you sort of like, okay, let's go. You're already on the road to changing what's causing you the problem. So it doesn't come up so much with me. And also, once it, you know, even if it does, resistance, et cetera, is still going to come up because part of you doesn't want to do the thing that you want to do. And so when that happens, that's just the newest defense.
Okay.
Some part of you doesn't want to do it. Oh, okay, cool. What does that part have to say?
Yeah.
Well, if I do that, then I won't, you know, what if you let go of being needed? No, can't do that. Okay, great. What does that part have to say? Well, because then I'll have no value and then everyone will leave me. It's like, oh, okay, great. Mm-hmm. How old does that piece feel? And now you've touched the source. You've touched the core of the issue that's causing the problem. So it always shows itself up. It's just a way of learning how to look at it and recognize it in the moment.
Yeah. Wow. And it sounds like by the time people find you, they are ready to move through.
They're ready to change it because I can't, that's the only thing I can't help with. If you're not that excited about changing your problem, then it's not a big enough problem. And that's perfectly fine. I don't need you to fix your problem.
That's right.
I have no agenda for you. If you want to keep it, I kept my problems for many years. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I wanted them and I was not ready to let go and I didn't.
And that's okay.
And that's okay.
That's okay.
And I learned to forgive myself for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. Because sometimes
and then by the time
you do.
I was ready. You know, just like you. It's like by the time that's the moment, that's the moment. Yep. Okay.
That's now right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny when you said there, you held on to your problems for however long. Or some people, I've met those people where I'm like, some people, I think they might be happy.
Oh,
with,
yeah.
With having
love,
the.
People love their problems.
Yeah. Why are we so attached to our problems?
You know, I think the stickiest reason, the strongest reason that attachment is there is because, they fit our life idea of what we think life is. Life is hard. So then you have, if that's your underlying belief, then you create a very difficult life for yourself because that's because you feel safest when you're right about the world.
Yeah. I wonder if sometimes our problems give us a certain type of validation.
Mm. Tell me more.
I don't know. It just occurred to me. Like, you know, if we have these problems, then I'm justified in feeling this way. And it kind of validates everything that we've always done.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. If men are always abusive, men are aggressive. That's your underlying belief. You will find that in partners, in coaches, in whatever. And then you'll be like, see, men are just aggressive. And now I'm going to go ahead and cope. I'm going to develop tactics or I'm going to, you know, be around men who are super the opposite or super, however you decide to like run it. And really it's all based on this, like, that's not actually how men are.
Yeah.
You're finding the ones who are, some are,
yeah.
You're finding all of them.
And one way to think about that is it keeps our attention on the other side of the net.
Yeah. You're right.
Right.
Total avoidance tactic.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
I think it was Stephen Covey. I think it was something I read or something, a talk I heard of his years and years ago. And he was saying how choice is really powerful, but when you pick up choice, because it's a stick, you can't pick up one end of the stick without picking up the other end of the stick.
Oh, I like that.
You know what I mean? So if you really say, I'm going to be responsible to myself, I'm going to focus on my side of the net, then that means that some of the blaming that we do
loses its power a little bit.
It loses its power. So
yeah.
Then what?
Yeah.
So then if I'm not happy, it's on me.
Yes. And then you're back to self-responsibility and people's resistance to actually diving into self-responsibility.
Yeah. Oh. And it can be hard. I mean, it's, I don't think any of that's necessarily easy.
It can be. But then we have an idea of it's hard. I have that come in when clients come to me as well. And they'll be like, well, man, this is really hard. Or, well, I've got a long way to go, but I made some progress. Mm. Like, how do you know how far you have to go?
That's right. But we tell ourselves those things.
And thus it is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
It's incredibly mutable. The whole, it's incredibly flow oriented. The way you decide things are is the way you see them. And then you make that it's like really, once you learn to see it, you start seeing it everywhere. You're like, oh, you'll see it in other people. Just like you said, right? And people will say like, life is so hard. Relationships are hard. I love that one. I mean, that is everywhere. Well, you know, relationships take so much work. I'm like, do they? Tell me.
Yeah.
Why do you keep being in that relationship that takes so much work? And I'm not saying that like to commit, you need to dig into yourself. It's the statement. Not all relationships are hard. I'm happy to have been in one for a year and a half that is the most effortless experience I've ever had. I mean, it's like, it's totally and completely effortless. And then I've been in really hard ones. And so it's the generalized, and this is how you recognize, actually, this your listeners might find interesting. this is how you recognize those underlying beliefs we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like, can't be trusted or whatever. They're called images. And you can recognize an image in your language and in your thought. I have a podcast episode that shows step by step how to do this, where you notice these generalizations in your language, right? Relationships are hard. Well, you haven't looked at all of them, so you can't possibly make that statement.
Yeah.
What you're really saying is, I see relationships as hard, which means the ones that aren't hard, you don't notice. And then the ones that are hard, you do register, and you're looking for hard ones. And so relationships are hard for you. But like, you know, oh, men don't like to commit anymore, mm-hmm. right? Women are too independent now. These sort of huge overarching statements that you can't possibly verify, those are always showing you that you have an image underneath the surface.
Wow. Yeah. And you know what? If you would send me a link to that podcast,
sure.
I'll put a link in the show notes because that could be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing I really noticed there is, you know, the men don't want to commit, whatever that might be. It sounds very permanent and pervasive.
Yes.
Right? The other thing I was thinking about, this is so stupid. I can relate anything to athletics, you know. But I love road cycling. And I love cycling. Well, I know I do. I love cycling mountain passes. Mm. And people will say to me all the time, they're like, that looks so hard. Well, is it a fair amount of physical activity? Yeah. It's, you know, you're not sitting there on an elevator. I mean, mm-hmm. you are working, but I don't think about that as hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just something I love to do,
yeah.
you know? And it's also funny, like there are times when you're in like, it's a steep part of it. I mean, it's a steep portion of it and your legs are screaming, your lungs are burning. And I just go to, I'm just going to pedal with ease and consistency or something like that, but it's always ease and strength or something like that. Because if I focus on, oh my God, my legs are burning. Guess what I notice more?
Yep.
That my legs are screaming, stop, you know, but no, I'm pedaling with ease and strength or whatever. It changes my relationship to what I'm doing.
Yes. It changes you in the moment.
Yeah.
You are choosing quite consciously who you want to be in that moment. And it doesn't matter to anybody else, but who you choose will lead to a different, slightly different outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating the way that things are connected.
Absolutely massive. That is so cool. And what you said about how somebody else sees your cycling and how you see it shows the different realities. That's another good one. That's a great example. I should use that in my teachings as well, because you've really, one person's looking at it and they're seeing all they see is how hard it is. And you're doing that thing. And they might even be a biker. I mean, they might be right next to you in the exact same moment, having a totally different experience. And you're sitting there like, okay, I'm at that edge. All right. Oh, I love being at this edge. Oh, this is the worst. Okay. All right. Here we go. You know, and you're like, you're engaged in it. You're doing whatever experience you're doing, but it could have been a very different experience. And you then took the onus to actually decide who you wanted to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. Those types of things, it's just fascinating to me how each day can be different on the bike. And there's no physical, like, I feel just as strong today, but if something's off here and mental, like the way you're perceiving it, it's like, oh, it's so much harder.
Yeah. Yeah. And the same way with like not really doing anything. I'm an equestrian. I rode horses for 25 years.
That's right.
And it was super competitive. And I was a show jumper. So I would jump really high fences, which I just super loved. Oh. And some people would talk about like trail rides, right? And they'd be like, I can't believe, because I would just go and I would go in the ring, you know, round in circles in the ring. And they'd be like, I can't believe you could just spend every day going around in circles in the ring. That seems so boring. I would love to, you know, I go out on the trails. And I see it the exact opposite way. Like every time I get on, same as every time you get on the bike, I go into that ring and I'm sitting on a different creature, right? And he's a little bit stiff today to the left. So we're going to go this way. And then we're going to do this. And his shoulder came out just a little bit. So we're going to move the shoulder back in on that curve so that his inside leg goes a little bit further out. And it's like, it's totally intricate. And I'm totally fascinated the entire time. There is no boredom. Whereas for me, I go out on a trail, unless it's the first time I've been on it, it's totally uninteresting.
Really?
I mean, the same woods, you're going, yep, there's that log again. It was there yesterday. Like, why am I walking down the same path I just walked down? Like, I'm not going any, you know what I mean? There's nothing different because you're not really working so much with the horse. Usually in the situation, you're kind of sightseeing.
Right.
It does sound like more fun. But to me, because I'm also kind of like work oriented, I'm like push oriented. I'm like, yeah, but how can we make this better? Like, how do we make this horse better than he was yesterday? And you can't really do that on the trail. And I just find it totally uninteresting.
Yeah. But it seems like when you're in the ring, like you're really focused on all the little micro details.
Yeah.
That most of us probably are, I don't even know about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Same as the sort of, you know, that edge, riding that edge on mm-hmm. on the bike of like, okay, where do you start to, you know?
Yeah. Very cool. That's a great, I used to ride horses when I was a kid. I was never like that good, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed
it a
lot.
It's so fun. It is so fun. It's a really, really powerful experience.
Yeah. There's something about a horse.
There's something about a horse. Yeah. Yeah. I heard something at one point where like 90% of 11-year-old girls wanted a horse or something like 90. It was some massive.
Yeah.
Massive percentage of young girls. God.
It is amazing. My sister had a horse.
Yeah, oh, really?
That was great. Yeah. She got a horse. I got a mule. I don't know.
Oh. That would give me a childhood complex right there.
Yeah. It was like, all right. But it was a donkey. I loved my donkey. Rosie was her name. She was awesome. God. She was so cute. All right. I wanted to ask you too about, I know on your website, you say finding and expressing your authentic self.
Mm.
What does that mean to you?
So the work has really shifted from dating and relationships or solving the underlying problem that's causing dating relationship problems to really solving the underlying causes problem that's like keeping people from being able to be themselves. I've created a 12-week program. It's called The Art of Authenticity. And it's geared to, I had an incredible time building this project. It just came through me somehow. I really wanted to delve into that piece that gets, you know, frightened in certain circumstances or the places where you self-doubt or where you don't feel like you can be really who you are, or where you even feel like who you really are is not okay. And it's about identifying and eliminating those underlying issues such that you can really step into with fearlessness, really effortlessly step into your own authenticity. Like, you know, the insecurities I was dealing with before, they kept me from being myself. I didn't feel comfortable or safe to be myself. And so I was like catty and really sarcastic and like kind of negative. And then as I cleared those, I began to sit more comfortably in my body. And like now I'm very comfortable in my body. And I didn't used to be like, I couldn't wear clothes. Like clothes didn't fit me quite right. And it was everywhere it looked like, man, clothes just don't seem to fit. And then as I dropped that weight and as I began to like sit in my body, now I can put a burlap sack on and I'm just totally comfortable and I feel great. You know, I'm like in love with myself. And so there's this shift that I went to that I teach in that program where I can now, before I used to reference outside, oh man, what's Bobby thinking about me as I'm talking?
Oh,
and I wonder
if
I'm like, you know, how's my hair doing? I didn't even look. I don't know what my hair is doing. I didn't look.
It's doing what it's doing.
Hopefully you couldn't tell, but like, I didn't even check it before I came on camera. I'm like, it's Bobby. We're going to hang out and have a good time. Yeah. And so there's just that way in which I've shifted from the outside inward to the inside outward. And now I radiate who I am from the inside out. And it's my default state. It's not a coping mechanism or a technique. It's not better than it was. The issue's gone. I have to remember what it was like to have been that other way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Cause I think it's one of the most powerful things in the world.
It kind of is. It changed your entire life experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, confidence issues, low self-esteem, low self-worth, you know, not feeling valued. I mean, like what you grew up with, that could have led to, and maybe it did, led to a whole bunch of relationships where you're trying to, it's like you're trying to prove yourself right. You're trying to, well, I definitely need to be valued. So I need that. So I need to be needed. And so for your entire life, you could have been in relationships where
that was
true, but it's not actually accurate. And so it makes life about 10,000 times harder than it needs to be.
Yeah. I was thinking about it. I don't know, over the last few weeks, I've been thinking about a lot of different things, but one of the things that's been on my mind is the difference between when we're trying to be versus when we are simply being.
Mm.
And it's a really big difference.
It is. The difference is between being and doing, because even if you're trying to be, you're doing.
You're doing. Yeah.
And the act of just sitting and being with yourself or with whatever's happening, that's the goal. When you can do that, then you're just sitting authentically in the moment.
Yeah. I'm reading Jim Quick's book, Limitless.
Oh, yes. I haven't
Love
read that
book.
One, but I've
very
but
good.
I've seen it around. Yes.
Yeah. Very, very good. And one of the things, and this may be what triggered it for me, he was talking about the power of when we write out our I am statements. I am X, you know? And it was just, it just kind of hit me like, yeah, versus, oh, this is what I want to be. No, this is who I am.
Yes.
And I don't know. I'm probably going to do some writing on it because it just really hit me, really resonated for me.
Yeah. You're talking about like essentially like affirmations, the way to be like, oh, I want to be this type of person. And the accurate affirmation, the affirmation that actually impacts your system quite strongly is when you live in the moment as if it were already true.
Yeah.
Right. What would it be like if I were successful? How would that feel in your body? And the more you can hold that state, we're diving into the law of attraction here. The more you can hold that state, the faster you will adjust to becoming that. You literally become that person. And then the outside world kind of catches up with you. It's kind of crazy, man.
It is.
Yeah.
But it works.
But it totally works. And it's measurable and repeatable. I created, after the Art of Authenticity, I created a mastermind where that was one of the things I wanted to teach people was like, here's how to actually learn and master manifestation.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool.
I mean, if you have one skill set in the world, that should be it, right?
Yeah. This is what you need.
Yeah.
All right. So I know this has been great. I do want to ask one more question and then we'll get to how can people learn more about you and that type of thing. But if you had the opportunity to go back to your younger self at any, whatever age that might be, what would be one piece of advice that you'd want to give your younger self?
That's such a great question. I actually do that sometimes. I will think about my sort of young self and I'll remember standing somewhere when I was, I don't know, 6 years old in the house that I was in. And I would reassure her that she's already doing it right. Like you can't do it wrong. So I was always worried that I was doing the wrong thing. And of all the things to be worried about, of course, within a household and a child, you might be doing the wrong thing. You go left, you're supposed to go right. But in life, nobody cares what you do. Nobody cares what you do. Nobody cares. You have total freedom. You can, you know, burn your whole house down if you want to. There are consequences. You're not going to have a house anymore. And the insurance company is going to have some questions. But like, in the adult world, it's your world. You know, you're making it. And so there's no real way to do it wrong per se, right? Just consequences you don't want. You might go to jail if you burn your house down.
Don't want that.
Or consequently, you probably don't want that, but maybe you do, in which case, maybe it's fine. You know, and so like, it doesn't, it's, I think we sort of still live as if there's like the sort of right and wrong and good and bad. And really there's just what feels good and what doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And so I think I would reassure her that she's on the right path and she doesn't need to worry. She doesn't need to worry so much.
Doesn't need to worry so much.
You got this, girl.
Yeah. I like that. That brings up a lot of fun thoughts for me. So, all right. So I know that you've shared a little bit about, you know, the work you do. What else should we know about your work and how can people learn more?
Absolutely. I've got a few different ways I can work with people. I've got some incredible coaching programs and they can be done live with me coaching or they can be done online by themselves. And I separated that out. So it's like a lower cost for people. If people are like, well, I just want to try it. You can just do the online course. You don't have to dive in with quite so much commitment. And I also do one-on-one sessions. So you can always just call me up and try one. My website, dominiedrew.com, is probably the best place to find me. And if people want to reach out on that contact page and mention this interview, then I'll be happy to do a free call with them.
Nice.
That would just sort of see how I work and get some clarity on what the issue is. Even if you don't end up working with me, it can be a really useful thing.
Very nice. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I can
That's
send you
awesome.
A link for that as well.
Perfect. That'd be terrific. Because I think, you know, what we're talking about, I think it's really important for people. It's
really important.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think both of us have been through it. So it's like, probably that's why we're so passionate about it.
Yeah. We're like, this is the greatest thing.
Trust me. This is it.
Just settle in. You're going to love it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today and to share. I think there's a ton of good value. Yeah. I've just been looking forward to this interview.
Good. I have as well. And thank you so much for having me. This has been a real honor.
Good. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation. I know that I was taking a lot of notes. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, master your inner game. This is something that I'm such a believer in. We often spend a lot of time worrying about what the other person is doing or about circumstances that we cannot control. Focus on you, but work on you. Master who you are, and the rest will fall into place. Number two, I found it very powerful when Dominie said, The extent to which you are not taking responsibility is the extent to which you cannot fix it. There is tremendous power when we truly own our own lives and our own choices. When we do that, we are taking control of our future. And number three, if you want to fix about 90% of the problems that you face, focus on the opponent on your side of the net. This borrows the expression from Tim Galway, who wrote The Inner Game of Tennis, and his belief that in tennis, as in life, our greatest opponent isn't the one on the other side of the net. Our greatest opponent is the one on our side of the net. Domini said that if it's not on your side of the net, it's not your business or problem because you can't fix it. And by the way, The Inner Game of Tennis by Tim Galway is one of my very favorite books on coaching and leadership. It was actually on my leadership book list I put together, the eclectic but essential book list. And if you're interested in that, if you haven't checked it out, you can just find learn more at unyielded.net/leadership book list. As always, I'm interested in what your favorite insights were from the interview. So please drop me a line at bobby@unyielded.net and let me know. On another note, we are busy building a course to be ready late spring of 2021. It's called Start Your Future Today, and we are excited to offer it because it brings together our experience over the last 20 plus years in creating the life that we love to live every day. So if you've ever found yourself saying, I feel stuck or trapped, and I don't know how to move forward, or I know what I want to do, but I don't know if it's possible, or I don't know how to get started, or you might be saying, you know, things are pretty good, but I wonder if there's something more. If you've ever said any version of those things to yourself, then this course is for you. In it, you'll learn how to describe the future that you want that is both inspiring and motivating, how to start moving towards that exciting future, because action is key. And that's one of my strengths, helping people find action. And then also, if you like, you can submit your story to me for feedback and ideas on your next steps. This course will help you start your future today. You will learn an approach and skills to write and live towards the next chapter of your life story. For a limited time, we are giving away scholarships to this course, and here's how you can enter to win. Number one, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. Two, leave a review of the podcast. Three, take a screenshot of your review. And then four, email that screenshot to hello@unyielded.net with the subject Start Program. That's it. That's all you have to do to enter. And we'll be selecting five lucky winners over the next month to receive a scholarship for the course. Just want to say thanks so much for tuning in to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What, where we are committed to sharing ideas and stories that will help us all flourish and live our lives our way.